This is the Live Your Edge podcast, episode 3. Hi, my name is Gilbert Joa, and today I'm going to be talking to Justin Y on how, after 20 years working in advertising and other fields, he made the change to start his own company. We will be talking about art, passion, and how to stay motivated even when times are tough. Hello, this is Gilbert. Welcome to the podcast. Let's get started with our guest interview with Justin Y. Good day, everyone. Today we have Justin Y with us. And Justin is a very accomplished artist, entrepreneur, marketer. And Justin, would you like
to... Yes, good afternoon to you, to everyone. I think it's... afternoon in New York right now.
Yeah, because I'm in New York and Justin is in
Hong Kong.
Hong Kong, and it's around 11 a.m. here, so doing this very late into the night. And thanks for having you.
My pleasure.
On the podcast. And Justin, maybe you would like to share a bit about who you are, what you do, and tell the listeners a little bit more about yourself.
Okay, thank you, Gilbert, for the opportunity to share my story and also my journey as an artist. I started not in art nor in design, graduated with an MBA many years ago and started working like everybody else in the corporate world. I was working in advertising, moved on to marketing, and eventually about 10 years ago, I decided that I wanted to start my own business. And when I started my own business, I kind of stumbled onto a few ideas and that failed miserably. And
what ideas were you working on?
Well, I wanted to start a marketing consulting agency, and I was selling ideas. I was selling things that weren't as tangible as what I'm doing now, and that didn't take off. And from there, I moved on to another type of consulting, which was cosmetic surgery, which is part of my background. And we were doing a lot of, I would say, medical tourism with Korea, between Korea and other parts of Southeast Asia, including Hong Kong. That didn't take off as well. So I thought for a while, what else could I do, since I had a lot of interest with color? And eventually, that's how I started into building my own brand. And I used art as the foundation of my current, I would say, business, but more in terms of passion, making the passion into my business.
Yeah, actually, I find that quite interesting because a lot of the listeners, and myself included, I mean, I spent years thinking about a passion of mine that I wanted to pursue, which was helping bridge people, bridge communities, and bridge the East and the West, sort of being a medium through communities.
Right.
And a lot of times we feel that, oh, this is just a passion. I mean, maybe it's a hobby, but I can't really see it becoming something a bit more and turning it into something that I can make a living off of, much
right.
less creating a life from. So how did you get started with making this change?
I think when we look at passion and we look at what we do outside of career, or when we look at how do we merge our passion as well as a career, or turn our passion into career and making it sustainable, I think that's one of the biggest challenges. I grew up in a generation where, you know, art or design wasn't one of your mainstream choices as a career. So I actually turned into an artist about 5 years ago, and I started when I was in my early 40s. So I'm in my mid-40s now. So it was very late in the career. I started working for about 20 years before I started this business right now. And if you look at your passion as a career choice and you go at it as a career, it would be very different compared to when you look at it as just a side business or a part interest, because you wouldn't be able to dedicate the same amount of time and energy and passion into driving a career. So I know of a lot of part-time or sideline artists where they paint because, or they do visual arts because they have a passion and they do it outside of their main job, and they find it very frustrating sometimes. I am one who believes that I can't do something part-time. I need to do it full-time. And if it's something full-time, then I would dedicate my entire life to that in order to build that and make it into something sustainable.
So speaking of part-time, did you also try to start something part-time in the past, and I'm sure maybe it didn't work out as you expected, and that's how you figure out that you must go full-time on it, or else it's not going to happen?
I think when I was working for someone in the corporate world, I decided that if I wanted to leave, then I would leave completely, because it's really difficult to concentrate on two aspects of having a career as well as trying to work out on something part-time basis, because where do you dedicate the amount of time you have or the amount of energy that you have? Because one side would suffer. And I always believe it's an all or nothing. You know, you can't do something halfway through and hoping that it will actually blossom and by chance or by luck. So what I did was I ensured that when I dived into something, especially when it's a career choice or a business choice, it had to be all or nothing. And so resources were placed, both monetary as well as time resources. And then that's how I started building the business block by block.
Wow. All or nothing, block by block. And what is there anything in particular that inspired you to make the transition from advertising to art?
I had a lot of questions before, you know, friends or clients who asked, you know, you must have started sketching when you were really young, or you started painting when you were really young, or you were designing when from a young age. And for me, I didn't do any of that. I came from a business background. I graduated with an MBA. I was lucky enough to live and work in different countries, from Canada to, you know, Australia, up to China, Hong Kong, some parts of Southeast Asia as well. And I realized that I often admired people who had a real drive, not just in life, but also in business. They found something, they found a calling, and they could actually make that calling into something that they enjoy doing. Nowadays, when I often go for certain gatherings, you know, with ex-colleagues or ex-classmates, you know, you often hear how frustrated they are at work, or how their hands are tied, you know, working for someone or in a corporate culture. And they often, some of the first conversations that we have over a meal is, where would you go for a vacation next? But when I started my own business, I never thought about vacations, because I knew that a lot of the enjoyment would be derived from the process itself of building a business, to see your ideas come to fruition, and the kind of dedication that you have within that process would be enough of an enjoyment for the person building the business. So looking back at where I came from and what I'm doing now, there is often a price to be paid for freedom. You know, we have a freedom to choose now as an entrepreneur, but also it comes with not having the sense of security as comparison.
I think a lot of times these days, especially because of social media and other forms of media, you see that entrepreneurship or starting your own business and doing your own thing is sort of romanticized, or even, I would say, glamorized.
Yes.
But a lot of times people don't see what the struggles behind all of it. And I think it's sometimes not just the long days or the insecurity of the income and so forth, but I think a lot of it is internal struggles. So what type of sacrifices have you had to make in this process?
I think there were a lot of, when you start to build a business or you start wanting to be an entrepreneur, there are a lot of choices that you make. Obviously, part of it is sacrificing your time, your energy, sacrificing part of your life and what you dedicate it to. But I think it's almost like a mental marathon. It's not just about how much strength or physical strength that one has. It's more in terms of how much mental and emotional, I would say, strength that one has. when there is insufficient resources, when there is insufficient time, when there is insufficient money, how do you continue to build that? And they say the first 3 years is tough, but I think the challenges will always build, and it always comes in different forms, shapes, and sizes. It's a matter of how much are you going to dedicate. And I always think there is a certain sense of insanity involved in it as well. It's almost like how often, how much, or how often would you beat yourself or, you know, or knock your head against the wall before you find a breakthrough?
We must be insane, right?
A sense of insanity, I always think so. Because one has to persevere until you get to where you want to be or where you want the level of business to be at.
And in terms of this insanity, I see that a lot of times we do crazy stuff, like we don't know if it's ever going to work, but when it does work, we were like, wow, this is ridiculous. Could you give us an example of, or a story of where you didn't think it was going to work out, and then, oh, just...
So when I started painting without any training, I fell in love. I started off by falling in love with colors, and I would look at different shades of colors, especially naturally occurring colors. And to me, that's most exciting. And lighting plays a big part. So when I started painting, I wanted to make it different. And till today, I only use my fingers to paint. I don't use any tools.
Like when I was in Hong Kong, and I see a lot of artwork in Hong Kong. People use paintbrushes or different types of tools, but I've never seen someone use their fingers to paint. So why particularly your fingers?
Well, what I wanted to do was I wanted to make things different, and I wanted it to be something that was an emotional, there had to be an emotional connection between what I produced by showcasing the kind of colors that I wanted to showcase. Started off on a canvas and eventually moved to different surfaces. And a couple of years ago, as you said, an example that I thought was pretty cool and pretty insane as well. In 2014, I was invited to Philadelphia, and I flew to Philadelphia on invite by a gallery as well as Audi. So one of the shows we did was a live performance for Audi in Philadelphia, and I was painting with my fingers on a car. And I thought that was pretty insane. I never thought about it, but it turned out really well. It was a really cool performance.
And I've seen that not only do you paint it on, say, like you just mentioned, a car, I've also seen instances where you painted on watches and what else have you painted on? Handbags.
Bags, watches. And what I wanted to do was I wanted to bring art into the audience. Going back to performance, I never thought that I would actually do a live performance. And by painting a live performance, you would think, oh, maybe it's going to take too long. It's going to take a long time. But what I did was I always tailor-made the performance within a particular song that I choose for a particular brand. And that makes it interesting. So going back to the surfaces, there were cars that I painted on, as small as watches, handbags, canvases on glass, on wood. And it's always a site-specific and brand-specific. So I didn't want to be irrelevant. I wanted it to be relevant for a particular audience within your daily life.
And also, I feel like you are bringing out the emotion of the surface or the object that you're painting on, right?
Yes, that's really important because sometimes you look at art, and I often paint colorful abstract pieces of work. And I have part of me says, I would like the audience to be able to feel the kind of emotion connection within the color, within the composition. And I think if you have a chance to actually look at the works, you would see the passion as well as how, I would say, attractive these pieces are, because it speaks to different people through different mediums and through different colors and compositions.
And this whole process is something that with time you were able to discover. Would you say the same for, say, if someone was pursuing a alternative career, they're trying to make a career change? Would
Yes.
you say that this is also like something they would not know when they start, that it would develop into this form?
You know, there were so many times I came to, there were times where I wanted to give up. And this is a reality. There are a lot of times where you think, this is too difficult, this is too hard, I don't have enough resources. Especially, there are lots of challenges, not just in Hong Kong, but in the industry. But if you look at the art industry, it's very similar to other types of commodities. It's very similar to other types of industries where if you wanted to switch, make a career change, or if you wanted to move from working for someone into working for yourself, the challenges are very, very different. And the demand on the individual is even more. I work 10 times even harder now compared to when I worked for someone because the demands never end. You know, clients' demands, the pressure that you have on yourself, these are all challenges that one would face. And so be it switching off industries or be it switching careers, it really depends on how far you want to go with that change.
Would you say that your background in business has helped you make that transition smoother? Or do you feel that if you had made the move, say, several years earlier, it would have been even different?
If I graduated as an artist, I think it might have been very different. And because I did career change much later in life, it also helped as well. Because it allowed me to look at what my past experiences were and how these experiences help me currently. So going back to the question, as if I made a career change earlier, I think it would have been different and I would have looked at the challenges differently. There'll never be a good time to change. It's just a matter of when does the opportunity present itself. Because they always say, if you wait for the right moment, the right amount of resources you have, the right amount of timing, these three items will never be aligned at the same time. You just need to make the best use of what you have at that moment to make the change.
What you would suggest is that even if your resources, your time, and the opportunity are not aligned, you would still make a jump or
I think,
move in the direction of it.
Yeah, I think that's what they say. You've got to follow your gut feel. Sometimes you know that there are certain opportunities that you really want to pursue. And I've made choices that I, in hindsight, weren't as good for the career. But at that point in time, you felt that it was the right move. So you, well, no matter what changes or what challenges you face, no matter what mistakes you make, those are just building blocks until you find the right path. And I would say that these experiences have been really vital to allow me to pursue what I'm pursuing right now.
Have you ever had an opportunity where you sat on it for too long or you did not act on it and then it went away and something you feel like, if I done that earlier, maybe it would have...
I'll give you an example. In 1997, about 20 years ago, I was applied for a fashion design and I got accepted. It was a fashion design school in Paris. And I just graduated with an MBA. I wanted to pursue a fashion career. And I went to Paris, got admitted, and I even found accommodation. And in 97, the market crashed. The financial market crashed. And I looked at what were the circumstances then. And I gave up the opportunity to pursue my fashion design passion. And I returned to Asia and started working. And I started working on the 1st of July in 1997. And I often looked at that and thought, what if I had chosen to pursue a career in fashion design in 97 compared to working for someone in 97, you know, 21 years down the road? What would it have been different? So what I do now, when I looked at an opportunity which I thought I would have had, I would have been a very different person, number one. Number two, I would have looked at my life very differently. Number three, as an artist, I would have been very different as well. Maybe I would have just looked at how beautiful my painting would be, but I wouldn't consider it a commercially viable as a career. But because I spent 21 years working on helping other brands develop the business from an operational point of view, from a marketing point of view, I can look at my own artistic career right now and think, is it a sustainable lifestyle? Is it a sustainable business? And I can look at not just the production aspects of my career, but also look at the marketability of my pieces. And in that way, I could draw a balance.
I love this. I think we're getting to the heart of it, which is, okay, you wanted to change into a career into art, but how do you turn into passion and commercialize it and turn it into something that would pay the bill and create a life for yourself? How can the audience, if they are looking to, maybe if they're into a fashion or if they're into art or into any other hobby, passion, and they want to really commercialize it, how can they do that?
I'll share another example. There's a very successful singer in Asia, and he shared his life story. He said before he graduated, he was in high school. He really loved playing computer games, and even till this day. And he almost didn't graduate because he spent so much time in high school just concentrating playing computer games. But eventually, what he did was he eventually pursued a career in music. And what he wanted to prove to the world that the amount of time he spent on playing computer games wasn't wasted. So what he did was, with his music, he decided to partner up with a gaming company. And because he spent so much time and energy and years on playing these games from this gaming company, he eventually had a collaboration with them where he produced music for their games or even soundtracks as well, which I think if we look at the passion that we have, if we look at what we really like, it's about how far we want to push the envelope. And because I wanted to make a career choice, I wanted to make it something that is sustainable, something that I could live off, I ensured that whatever I produced and I sold, I could invest continuously in the business, and therefore I could sustain my passion. Sometimes artists get offended when they are being labeled as a commercial artist, and I find that labeling I don't have an issue with that labeling, because if you're able to sell your art, which means you have enough resources to continue a career, and there's nothing wrong with that. When I started, I worked a lot with commercial brands. Till this day, I have worked with an airlines. I've worked with two car brands, you know, Audi, Bentley. I've worked with Hainan Airlines. I've worked with fashion brands like Lululemon, perfume brands like Penhaligon's. And I've started selling over the years to many financial institutions, banks from HSBC, Sumitomo Bank, and these. So it really depends on the individual and the kind of choices that they make. We would choose the path very differently eventually.
So in terms of, I remember you had quite a number of interesting ways in terms of talking commercializing.
Yes.
Collaborations. Let's talk about collaborations, because you have a very creative way of collaborating with different brands and bringing it into art, bringing art to them. Could you tell us a little bit about some of the campaigns you've done or some of the different ideas that you implemented? Because I've seen a lot. I remember I've seen a lot.
Sure. I often look at what I could add to the campaign to begin with. It's not about what my art can say. It's about how does my art add value to the campaign for the particular brand. I'll give you an example with Lululemon. Sportswear, specifically a Canadian yoga brand, that's how they started. They came to me, they said that they wanted to have an event with me in a mall for their first anniversary, celebrating the store's first anniversary. And I looked at the brand and I said, you know, how can I add value to it? They are a worldwide brand, they are very much more established. I was only a 3-year-old brand at that point in time. So I came to them with a proposal. I said, why don't we add within the art that I produce 4 of your top selling pieces of clothing? So I picked 2 pieces from the male collection and 2 pieces from the female collection. And I painted a scene of their yoga festival from Vancouver. They have a yoga and music festival, a yearly festival. And I painted a celebratory scene. which was 3 meters long, 1.5 meters high. And we put that piece in the window display. And because it was so vibrant and so colorful, yet communicating and showcasing the pieces of their clothing, it drew a lot of attention to the store. And that's what I enjoy doing, you know, where it's not just about the art, but it's about communicating something that's relevant to the brand, attracting more individuals into this in the store. And the foot traffic was really good. We initially they wanted the artwork to be in the store window for only 3 weeks, but eventually we had it for 3 months because it was so successful.
And do you know how much foot traffic the mall gets on a daily basis or weekly, monthly basis?
No idea, but Lululemon is situated across from the Apple Store, which has 4 levels. So you can imagine the kind of traffic that...
tens of thousands of people a day, I can imagine.
Yeah. That's one very, I would say I'm really happy with that example because it shows the collaborative effort between two brands.
I mean, sometimes you have collaborations between two brands, which you could have never really thought about and put a little twist on it. I remember we did an event together.
Yes.
We did it at a clothing store.
Yes.
And I was doing it for the golf society I was running. And we decided to do a Whiskey X art event. So in the showroom or in the clothing store, I remember we had a painting on the wall.
Yeah.
It was amazing. It was a horse, I believe.
Yes, it was a horse, yes.
And that was because it was the year of the horse, or?
It was.
And we had the whiskey tasting on the side. So people would come in, they would check out the clothes, they have some whiskey, and they can admire the artwork. And yet, it was sort of like an event organized by my golf society. So it was bringing together lifestyle from different aspects.
Yes.
And converging interests and hobbies, passions, and whatnot.
I think sometimes also it's about, as they say, it sounds a little bit cliche when we say we think out of the box, but what I normally do is I look at how can I bring the work into the audience rather than to have it just at the gallery and hoping that someone will walk in to look at the work, because there is such a fear sometimes to walk through the gallery because it seems to be very sterile and cold. But if you take the art out of the gallery into the audience, you know, into restaurants and bars and malls and, you know, eateries, it makes it a lot more accessible. And that's what I've been doing over the past 5 years. I've done over 200 shows worldwide, and normally a small percentage of the work I actually showcase in galleries. A lot of the works I actually showcase within different parts in order to reach a wider audience.
And I think one of the things that we talk about on this podcast is creating these opportunities for collaboration, whether they're meeting potential clients or partners and so forth. And I see that a lot of the offline events have been doing a lot for your brand. Have you also looked into the online aspect of it?
When I looked at the online side of sales, for example, through either a website or through advertising through Facebook or Instagram, again, I looked at collaborative platforms where not specifically just for art, but in terms of products or fast-moving consumer goods or designer goods. In that way, people can get a chance to look at my stuff from a different perspective and look at it within a different context. So it becomes more interesting that way. Interestingly enough, I don't even put any of my artwork on any of the art online platforms because I find that it's very crowded and it's really like a marketplace. But if you look at the works in a different perspective on a different platform, it seems refreshing. So that's how I look at it very differently.
So you're going through sort of the back door, whereas everyone else, all the other artists are posting their works online and they're just focused on their artwork, but they're kind of disconnecting with the rest of the...
I look at context and look at how the work looks more interesting. It also goes in line with when I look at my career as an artist. So if I came from a more traditional line of thinking, I would have allowed a gallery to dictate my career. But maybe because of age and also experience, I do not do that. I look at my career and think, what are some of the other more interesting aspects of creativity which I can showcase? And so last year, I spent a whole summer in London and Europe, and I took classes in interior design, because I realized that a lot of my clients, when they ask for commission pieces, I'm often invited to partake in the actual development of the site, from the internal coloring to actually the structural dynamics. And so when I create a piece, if I understand the lighting, the structure, world dynamics, the architecture, and also their requirements, also sometimes it's a commercial project, it adds value to the business as well. It also adds value to the client.
So that's beyond just selling a piece of art. It's more of ingraining the art
within the context of the environment. I think when you look at the large brands and you look at the very large successful international brands, they talk about stickiness. And a term stickiness means, to some extent, it can also mean loyalty. And if you create an opportunity where clients look at your work, not just from its color composition, but also look at the relevance and also look at how does this piece of work communicate more than just a piece of art, then it makes the brand sticky.
So you don't have a physical gallery, is that correct?
And I have an office in a showroom. It's also located in the IFC in Tower 2, where my clients by appointment would be able to come and see the work.
As I remember, you put your paintings on the entire floor.
Yes, we have a section in the office where we, as a showroom, my guests would be able to come and admire the work. I also work with a lot of other, I would say, showrooms close to where I am, and present the work in a different environment. So currently, I have two locations in Central, one showcasing the colorful masterpieces within a three-story fine dining restaurant. And there's also another gallery which I work with, which is a jewelry gallery. And I'm showcasing my latest collection of photography. So it's very,
wow,
very
that's awesome. A lot of the clients, I remember you told me a lot of the clients from your showroom, and say in the IFC, since the paintings are on the wall and they have offices there, people are passing by every day. They see it every single day.
Yes.
And then one day they decide, hey, you know what? I'm just going to buy this since I like it so much. I can buy this so much. Why don't I just buy it? And that has been the case for you, right?
It has been. I guess because I didn't want to be far away from the action, as in, if you look at retail, you always think about location. And I guess that's why when I looked at my own brand and my own, I would say, wouldn't say retail space, but my own showroom, I wanted it to be convenient to the financial institutions, my primary and secondary targets. I wanted it to be conveniently located, and I wanted it to be within the right clientele mix. And so that's why I chose the IFC. And I think it's also very, very important, because if it's inconvenient and if it's not catered to the right target audience, I wouldn't be able to sustain a business that way.
And speaking of the clientele, I'm sure over the years you have accumulated a lot of contacts that are friends, family, and so forth, and they've slowly became your customers.
Yes. I think sometimes when you look at building a brand or doing a show or doing an art fair or an exhibition, there are two aspects of it, I think. Obviously, the first aspect is you would hope to sell, because it is a retail or a selling environment. But I think more importantly for me, I look at it in terms of actually building the brand, because it allows you to come in contact with other clients, potential clients, younger clients. And so there's an educational aspect of it. There's also the selling aspect, but also there's the brand building aspect of it. Someone that might come to my show, they might not be ready to part with the money, or the pieces of work might not speak to them. But it doesn't mean that 2 years or 5 years down the road, they wouldn't be one of your collectors.
Yeah, I'm sure, because they're seeing your work everywhere. And you also got into exposure on a number of publications, right?
Yes.
Was it Hong Kong Tattler? Or?
There were a lot of publications, both online and offline. And I think...
Does that help? Or do you feel that the events are still more effective? The events and the placing the art in a strategic location?
I think being able to showcase the work and also my story on different media platforms really helps, because sometimes you don't know who is out there looking and listening and also watching the interviews or listening. Like, for example, our eventual podcast, you know, it's a worldwide platform. But because I'm very much more targeting, I target much of the financial institutions. So sometimes the interviews are being carried on the finance channel. That really helps. But again, being able to meet the artist and the artist being able to actually talk about the piece of work on a one-on-one basis, I think that to me, it's a more intimate selling, and that actually helps even more.
So where do you see this going in, say, 10 years down the road? What would be sort of dream scenario for you?
You know, one of my dreams is really to have my own solo exhibition in the Louvre. And that's where I pitch, you know. I mean, they always say, if your dreams are too big and someone laughs at you, you know, it's not for anybody, it's for yourself. And I always, that has always been one of my personal goals, is to have my own solo exhibition at the Louvre. And hopefully one day.
Have you reached out to them yet?
Hopefully one day. Hopefully one day. You know, because I always think there's a lot of ways in which we can showcase our work. And for me, it's more important that the audience sees a certain sense of connection from what I showcase and what I paint. I hope that they would understand the journey. And they always, my work always revolves in three, within three themes. It sounds, to me, I hold it very dear. So love is one, passion, and also hope. I think these three are themes that often I paint. I revolve my paintings around these three themes, because I think I look at positivity, I look at what colors can bring, can communicate, and these are three themes I often paint. And hopefully, you know, when people see the work, they will feel that way.
So which is your favorite project or piece that you have worked on that has expressed these three themes of love, passion, and hope? Or is your next project always the best project?
No. I had a really interesting project I worked on. It's for a China-based, I would say, sports brand. It's called Anta, A-N-T-A, Anta. They are a huge sporting brand in China. They have outpaced Li Ning, apparently, in terms of shops and stores and what they sell. They are listed in Hong Kong. And in 2016, I was invited by the interior designer and was selected by the brand's chairman to paint a piece for his office in Hong Kong. And when I looked at the project, I thought about it and I said, you know, what can I help them communicate? It's a new office in Hong Kong. It's a beautiful office. They, besides Anta, they also have the rights for Fila. And so I painted a huge piece of work called One Step Up. And it means that they could eventually and will face every challenge, but be able to overtake that challenge and build the business one step up at a time. And so they fell in love with the concept. They really liked the idea. And for me, within that composition, It looked like a huge mountain filled with silver and gold and metallic colors, but also very fluorescent in its nature, vibrant. And so I was able to communicate the love, the passion, as well as everything that's positive about facing challenges and building a business. And it's one of the most memorable pieces of work that I've actually created.
I'm sure the audience can take away a lot of tips on,
thank you,
on this, because a lot of times when things are not happening fast enough, we always have this dilemma where we're working hard on something, takes months, years, and it's still not materializing. So yes. I feel that having that passion for your work is crucial. It's almost the time to wrap up the podcast, this episode.
Sure.
Is there any advice that you would love to give someone listening to this that is looking to start their own company, make a career move, or do something unconventional?
I watch The View almost religiously on a daily basis because I feel that it's really interesting to look at politics and also look at the U.S. culture from a different perspective, from the perspective of the five ladies that are hosting it. And recently, there was guests, and she used to be President Obama's advisor. And she recently wrote a book, and the book was about what she would have told herself 10 years ago or 20 years ago. And I think if I had a piece of advice for myself, 10 years ago, I would say there will be lots of challenges, then there will be lots of difficulties. And sometimes we can't see the light, we can't see the tunnel, the end of the tunnel. And it's often hard and dark and lonely and gloomy. But sometimes you just really need to step aside or step out or step back just for a quick moment and to believe in the choices that you're going to make and believe in yourself just a little bit more, and it will come through. It's not cliche, but I've lived through it. I've lived through really, really, I would say, hard moments where I had no more than $100 in my pocket, and I had rent to pay, I had bills to pay, and I thought to myself, is this going to be the end of my world? And eventually, I don't know how, but I managed, and we just need to give ourselves a little bit more credit and for the strength and to give ourselves a little bit more time to believe in ourselves. And I think it would come through.
Wow, that's amazing. Hearing you say to step out and to step back and to look back in with a different perspective, and to realize that really it's a journey, right? It's a process.
Yes.
And
just give ourselves a little bit more credit, just a little bit more, because there's always so much doubt, not just from ourselves, but from our surroundings, be it from the media, from our friends, from our parents, from people that we really care about. But if deep down you believe in that and that's something that you strongly feel that that's something that you want to do, and till death do you part from that belief, I think then you would somehow make it work.
Great stuff, Justin.
Thank you, Gilbert.
So if people want to follow you,
yes,
or find you on social media,
yes,
how can they do that?
So it's Justin Y, spelled JustinY. Art, A-R-T. So JustinY, A-R-T. So that's for Facebook, Instagram, and website.
Nice.
On my website, you'll be able to see a lot of live performances that I've done, the brand collaborations, images, videos, and there's a channel in which I put a lot of videos in YouTube as well. So you'll see a lot. It's pretty comprehensive.
Great stuff. Thank you, Justin, for joining us today.
Thank you so much for your time.
And thank you, audience, listeners, for tuning in today. And if you want to check out more of our podcast, subscribe for more, and looking forward to seeing you soon.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. You can find more episodes every Tuesday. If you haven't done so, please subscribe for more updates as they come. Until next time.